Hello everyone, I'm glad to see you, even if it's just virtually. The title of this talk is Neuroresonance in the Primal Premotor Cortices during the motor preparation stage of a synchronization task with discrete periodic stimuli. Which is just a long and convoluted way of saying that we're going to look into monkey brains while they're doing the seemingly most basic rhythm task. So humans can do entrainment, right? And that's interesting. And what it's also interesting is what kind of neurodynamics is involved. To study that, we'll actually not consider humans, we'll consider animals, consider monkeys tapping. And they won't be doing anything fancy like extracting a beat because they cannot. They would simply will be trying to synchronize their taps with a simple periodic stimulus. Before we get into the data, let's try to be more precise about the word entrainment. These papers that came out recently suggest that we might have been using the concept a little bit too loosely. So I highly recommend this book, which for many of us served as the textbook, as the manual, so to speak, on synchronization, dynamics, entrainment, phase, etc. But instead of just going that for in the interest of time, I'll use two examples to illustrate an interesting distinction. So on the left side, you have two clocks with pendulums that are mechanically coupled, and this can be called entrainment. Whereas on the right side, you have two systems that also in some sense synchronize, but it's better called this resonance than entrainment. The distinguishing feature is that on the left side, these oscillate on their own, with or without input. You could separate them and they'll keep doing their thing. They just won't be aligned anymore. Whereas on the right side, they won't do anything. So they need stimulation to produce some kind of oscillation. And another way of thinking of this is pushing a swing. You can tell apart these two scenarios by looking at the phase and the amplitude. On the left side, the amplitude stays the same. It doesn't change much. It's just they do the thing which it oscillates. Just their phases align when there's coupling. And on the right side, they don't do much unless there's stimulation. So the amplitude rises from zero to some value pretty quickly. These two scenarios lead to two different kinds of theories. In the one case, you presuppose some kind of ongoing oscillation. In the other case, you don't. So what do we see in the monkey tapping task? So first, what's the task exactly? The monkeys sit and attend to either visual or auditory stimuli, and in this case they wait a few cycles and then they start tapping. The recordings are from premotor and supplementary areas with shanks that have multiple channels so that we can infer as many separate neurons in the area where the shank is inserted as possible. To get an idea of the sort of data that we first deal with, these are averages plus variability of two individual cells. You can already see that if we align them with respect to the beginning of tapping, you have this rise in amplitude. And this already makes the point of this talk, but I'm just gonna keep making this point with different ways of looking at the data. So maybe it's not enough to just look at individual cells, it's better to look at population trajectories. This is because cells in a population are correlated and connected, and we have to get to some low dimensional space that describes as many cells as possible. One classic way for doing this is with principal component analysis, here illustrated with this figure. On the left side, you have in three dimensions data embedded that clusters in such a way that it mostly projects onto one single plane. So if you find how to project this data, you get a very you have a more efficient description, and in this case you also get better view of the data. How it works I'm not gonna explain, but maybe you can just get an intuitive feel with this interesting graphic. In our case, we're dealing first with spikes. These are times when individual neurons fire. We concatenate them across trials. We get firing rates, and these are smoothed. With this time series, now we have to find the projection into these so-called latent variables. So from the R's to the S's. In this case, for illustration, again, you have from 3 dimensions to 2, you describe sufficient amount of the data. And of course, for neural data, it's more than just 2. Importantly, once you have these, you can put them together to see how the population trajectory evolves along the course of the trial. So here, this is being rotated, so you can see it from different perspectives. The green triangle is the beginning of the trial, and you have the circles are stimuli. At the beginning, not much is happening. Then the trajectory shifts in a different area, and then you start to see something like oscillation in the plane, in a different plane, with cycles that are in some part of them is locked to the stimulus. You tend to see a lot in animals, in different tasks, in different areas of recording. Now let's look at our data. This is the first principal component. The colors correspond to different stimulus periods. Importantly, obviously, again, the peaks tend to increase, but we don't want to just look at them, we want to quantify something. So we divide the time series into cycles based on the stimuli. We'll look for the peaks and the valleys, and we'll use some basic stats to see how they change. Using linear mixed effect models, we find that indeed, across the two monkeys and different conditions and trials, we see that the peaks tend to increase and the valleys decrease. So this tells us that the modulation amplitude increases with successive stimuli up to the beginning of tapping. The same for the two monkeys. So there's some small differences between the two monkeys, but the overall pattern test is the same. And again, this is what we expect from resonance, not from entrainment. Let's look at a different study with a different animals and a slightly different task, only a small difference in that the number of trials that the monkey waits before it starts tapping is either short or long. Let me first show you the trajectories. Before we measure anything, it's also useful to just look at them because it's interesting to see the neural activity from this perspective. Here we have a selected set of 3 dimensions of the principal component space, and here we have another set of 3. Again, we see a little bit of activity happening at the beginning, then the trajectory shifts in a different area and it sort of oscillates in the plane with some locking to the stimuli. It's easier to analyze, however, individual components. So we'll starting with PC1. As you can see at the beginning, not much is happening. Then there's one big oscillation before tapping begins, and then we have something more consistent locked to the stimuli while the monkey is tapping. And pretty much the same happens in the other dimensions of the population space. So PC2, have one big wave up and down, and then tapping starts. And then this is the case also for 3 and etc. Which is enough for us to draw some conclusions. First, just to reiterate, while the monkeys prepared to synchronize with the periodic stimulus, oscillation amplitude was found to rise from 0 over successive stimuli. And we also saw that in some cases within a single stimulus cycle before the onset of tapping. Keeping in mind that this is within constraints, right, because these are heavily trained animals in a particular task and the recordings are from particular areas. Within those constraints, I think this is easier to make sense of as resonance. And this gives us some hints, some constraints on how we can imagine the underlying mechanism, what kind of theory it is. Next, a little bit further implication or interpretation if you wish. Just do not presuppose that oscillations are just there all the time. In fact, I could imagine a little exercise. I was going to ask you, before showing you the neural data, just explaining the task and the performance, what you would have imagined to see in these figures. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of you, at least, would have come up with something like this. So you have waves, and then these waves get aligned with the stimuli. In fact, me too, I maybe expected this. So at the beginning, it was hard for me to make sense and figure out what this meant, which is what we observed actually. And I think for now, this is enough. Thank you very much.